Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the 5E Filibuster.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I am David Johnson. I have Mac McIntyre over here.
Hack-a-do.
And Eric Asher-Slager.
Hello.
Oh, all right. And
this can is... Can I trademark hello?
You can. I think so. I don't have the reference, but, you know, you told it was last week, right? What was trademarked? What was
The Barbie stuff. The
Nicholas,
name Nicholas,
right? Yeah. That's great.
I'm trademarking hello right now.
Okay. No, I think Lionel Richie beat you to it.
I'm going to trademark every indefinite article I can think of. How about that? we'll have the whole English language taken care of. So anyway, we're going to get you right for this Columbus Day weekend. Do you guys have Columbus Day off?
No. Are you kidding me?
Not me.
Some people do. Like, it's surprising.
No, I know.
It's a surprising holiday to get off, but like, I'm not even sure if I have it off or not. I asked my supervisor. I wasn't sure. Because it's one of those... Well, wow, we have that one off. You know, it's one of those holidays. So,
I mean, I certainly appreciate the discovery of the land that we live in, but you know, let's face it, it's kind of a fake holiday.
That is, yeah. So, thanks, Columbus. All due respect, but I got to feed my kids. You know. Okay. Well, anyway, if you have it off, enjoy the long weekend. If not, too bad for you. So, let's get right to it, Mac. What have you been consuming your precious time with lately?
Well, first of all, definitely got to give a shout out to our fellow podcasters over at F This Movie.
Ah, yes. Eric is a frequent contributor there.
That's right. They did a commentary track for Sleepaway Camp.
Ah, yes.
Which is just amazing. Not only is it just hysterically funny what those guys just tore the movie to pieces, but it was also really informative. I learned more about the movie from them than I learned from the actual commentary track that comes with the DVD. I encourage everyone to check that out.
And especially challenging considering that movie is pretty much all its final scene.
Exactly.
So the fact that they were able to burn through that, you know, that's notable. So yeah, definitely worth a shout out. Check out our brothers in crime over there.
And that's to continue the shout out. That's part of their whole scary movie month thing. So there's a seven word movie reviews you can post over on the site as you watch movies, and they're doing a bunch of podcasts and stuff. So
nice.
Very exciting.
All right, excellent, worth checking out for sure. So continue on, Mac.
Also wondering what you guys think about this movie coming out this weekend. This Real Steel. You seen the ads for that?
I have.
Yeah.
And wait, no Rock'em Sock'em Robot references allowed in this podcast.
Oh, well,
I see for everything. So I'm sure Rotten Tomatoes is like 50 of them already. So.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this movie. I'm trying to wrap my head around the premise.
If I had like a 10-year-old son, this would be the perfect movie to bring him to. That's what I was thinking.
I don't know a ton about it except that it reminds me of a Twilight Zone episode from this last season that I reviewed.
Really?
And it might even have come from that originally. In that episode, boxing between humans had been outlawed, so it was only between robots. And there was a guy who had a robot that he was using to fight, but it kept breaking down. And since he used to be a boxer, he actually pretended to be a robot and went in the ring against an actual robot, which is probably a far more interesting story than the trailer I saw for this movie.
Right.
Well, it is pulling a 71% right now. So that's surprisingly not terrible.
It hasn't opened yet, but
that's true.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out the premise. So it's robots or boxing, but Hugh Jackman wants to get back into the game, are they trying to set things up so he gets into the ring and actually boxes a robot?
Is that where they're
going with it?
No, I'm pretty sure that wouldn't happen. It looks like if I didn't infer from the trailer, he might take it over like it's a radio shack or a radio controlled thing or something, like it tracks his movements. But I mean, even Hugh Jackman climbing into a room with like Optimus Prime, that's a tough one to swallow, I think.
Right, I know, but I wonder if that's where it's going. So.
I don't know. I still think I look at that and I'm just saying I would be there in a second with my 10-year-old son and he would make me go, you know. So
really you'd take Paco?
I would take pocket. You weren't supposed to mention pocket.
I'm sorry.
Now I have INS coming to my door.
You're talking metaphorical. I'm sorry. I was listening.
You know how hard it is to get those INS guys off my property?
I really apologize.
Sorry.
I'm going to have that picture of whatever that little kid's name is. Jen Reno and that.
Lo siento, Paco.
Well, to answer your question, yes, Eric. Paco's been dying to see it. And we're going to go watch it, okay? There you go. In the cover of night, we're going to go see it.
That was so casually racist to me. I love it.
That's true. Yeah, there's probably a lot to pick through there. So.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else, Matt? Did you see anything, or are you just wondering aloud what real stuff?
That's pretty much it. I've been, I was watching Mythbusters earlier, and they're doing like a cross promotion with the movie. So it's like every 2 minutes, there's a new Real Steel ad popping up during Mythbusters. So it's been on my mind. I'm just wondering, like, what on earth is this movie? I can't get my head wrapped around it.
A kid's movie. Feel good. Dad and son type of thing, I think.
With killer robots.
I don't know if they kill each other. Yeah, we'll see. Although I would say, as many problems as like Transformers 3 had, I was surprised by the amount of robot murder that transpired there.
Yeah.
You know, like Optimus Prime turns into a hitman from Goodfellas or something. Really? he does a Sub-Zero spinal cord rip on one of them and then shoots the other guy in the back of the head twice. It's pretty, yeah.
Can you actually murder a robot?
I don't know, can you?
Is that like if you crash your car and it's totaled, so. Did you murder your car?
Now that's racist.
That's true. Sorry.
You know, if a Transformer is going to be like a Goodfellas gangster, that's pretty convenient because he transforms into the car and you've got the trunk right there. Just throw the body in your own trunk.
Sure.
It's even more insulting because you're basically throwing it and it's in your own butt because you're right. A robot car. So I assume. I assume the trunk is the butt of the robot. Is that correct?
I don't know, but it sounds ignorant.
I know. I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me today.
You and your Paco jokes and your,
I know.
And your Transformers.
You might as well just kick me off the podcast right now. Yeah. And take my Are You Ready for Some Podcasting theme off the beginning of the show.
That's right, yes.
Just really just kick me the curve.
This Friday filibuster is gonna get a low grade from the ACLU, I presume. all right, well, we will see. Okay, Mac, would you go see that movie? Would you see it?
I don't know. I don't know if the curiosity factor will get to me or not. It might.
Perhaps it may, so we can look forward to that review. All right, Eric, how about you?
Oh, I think it's time for a little old news with Eric Asperschlager, don't you?
Yes.
So I finally got around to watching the first season of Deadwood. Took it out of the library.
That's right,
Magical Library, love the magic. Yes, I went to Hogwarts, and they have a really good DVD section.
I think your library is better than Hogwarts Library.
It's pretty good.
Library that sells you a Jack Bauer puzzle, right?
It's true, yeah. They recently had that book sale again. I did not see any more Kiefer Sutherland-related puzzles out, fortunately. But maybe I got there too late. So Deadwood... Yeah, it's one of those shows you hear a lot about and got a lot of critical acclaim when it was on, but I didn't have HBO, so I never saw it. And I think it definitely lives up to a lot of the praise that it got. It sort of has two big things going for it. This is, of course, the HBO drama set in the Old West, like the 18 somethings out in South Dakota. This place called Deadwood, which is a camp, but it was technically outside of, it was not part of the United States. It was kind of on Indian land, so they didn't have to abide by any laws. And so people were sort of making their own way. And this camp is populated by, kind of a ruthless saloon owner and, various people who are scheming and just trying to make a living and whoring and drinking and all that kind of stuff. And Timothy Oliphant plays a marshal who, he and his associate moved to the town to start a hardware store, and he wants to get out of that, get out of it, away from his old life, start a new life, and kind of gets wrapped up with the goings on. So,
is he a good guy, or is he one of the dark anti-heroes, or what?
He's a good guy. He's basically one of those things where every time he wants to get out, they pull him back in, type of thing.
Gotcha. Is he doing some Raylan Givens or?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of like a moodier Raylan Givens. It's very. I'm glad I saw this after watching Justified, because otherwise I think it would have been a little more difficult to watch Justified. I think the show has two big things going for it. One is the kind of the sense of place and the setting. I mean, they really go for kind of an authentic feel. It's very dirty, very grimy. You know, mud everywhere. Everyone's kind of caked in dirt all the time. And then the acting. It's just really just so many kind of powerhouse performances. And it's a very kind of character heavy show. It's not, you know, not a lot of plot twists and turns. There's definitely things that happen over the course of the season, but they're mostly kind of character arcs more so than like big, you know, there's no mystery. There's no big, you know, overarching storyline. Ian McShane plays the kind of the main antagonist, Al Swearengen, and there's also the guy, I can't remember the actor's name, but he played Noah Daniels on 24. The vice president who who swept the leg on you know, the other guy, the president. Right. And
there's like three presidents within 2 years in that show.
Basically, yeah. And there are a bunch of people that I recognize. A couple of people from Sons of Anarchy. The guy who played Chief Unser in Sons of Anarchy is one of the he plays an associate of Wild Bill Hickok, who's played by Keith Carradine, and kind of the. The main prostitute on the show was the actress who played the main Irish woman in season 3.
Yes, right.
So she's on the show. Titus Welliver shows up later on, who was in Sons of Anarchy and Lost and stuff. So there's a lot of people you'd recognize on the show, and I enjoyed it. I want to track down the next season. Again, through the library, I'm sure. But it's not one of those things where it ends and I have to find out what happens next. But, you know, I enjoyed it. And, so, do you have any questions?
That's something that's always been on my radar, never got around to seeing. Probably because I heard it kind of ended abruptly.
Oh, okay.
Who is it? Is it Milch? Did Milch create
it? Yep, that? Yeah, that's okay. Right. Yeah,
like, you went on to do, like, John in Cincinnati or something. So,
oh, okay. Okay,
maybe that's the reason why, like, Carnival, which is, I think that's an HBO show too.
Yeah,
that sounded cool, but again, I heard that one kind of ended. So maybe it's a lame way to choose what not to watch, but I guess it's like my
clip. No, there are a lot of worthwhile shows out there, so you can't watch everything.
That's right. Yeah. And someone's got to watch Kendra, like the review I just finished here. Kendra.
I apologize.
You go, girl. That's what it is.
And the only other thing I'll mention is thanks to Showtime and YouTube, I watched the season premiere of Dexter.
Nice.
Too much about it. They actually did this thing where you know, we don't get Showtime, but they had the first episode of this new season up for free with the language and nudity, you know, edited out. But you can totally watch it, and I watched it in high def on my computer. It was nice.
Yeah, all 8 minutes of it now without that edited out.
I know. Well, they kept it to the main length. But yeah, it seems like, and I won't say too much about it, Dave. I know that you're going to be watching it.
Yeah, we secured Showtime for free for 3 months. So,
nice.
Goodbye Showtime in 3 months, but for now, yeah, Dexter and Homeland too, which
sounds really good.
And I think they did the same thing, Ark. They like streamed it somewhere.
Oh, okay.
20 bits, you know, edited out, but, I heard good things about that show too.
Yeah. So I think without saying too much about Dexter, it looks like they are, it's set about a year after the fifth season. So they're not necessarily resetting the table, but it seems like they're, it's not a strict continuation of what happened.
Right.
Because season 5 really picked up right where season 4 left off and kind of carried a lot of the baggage from the season before. This seems like maybe they're trying to kind of get back to basics, which is nice. And it seems like there's a kind of very heavy religious overtone to the season, which should be interesting. So I definitely look forward to watching it in a year when it comes out on DVD. So,
all right.
Anyway,
that'll fulfill that year's old news with Eric Ashford.
Yeah, there you go. This is what we call a tease for next year.
That's right. In the next year when Eric has a review on Dexter.
So that's pretty much it for me.
Well, for real quick, I'll just revisit. So last week I kind of expressed, I guess a tepid reaction to Thursday's lineup of NBC shows, Community, Parks and Rec, and The Office. And, I would just like to say that the second installments of the seasons actually, I thought were much better. Community is very much like the New England Patriots under Bill Belichick in that if there's a clunker in there, they always rebound with a great performance. So,
yeah.
The Patriots always seem to win a game after a loss in convincing fashion. Well, the Community, If there's one that I didn't quite like, usually you can safe bet that the next episode will be really good. I thought Community was very funny. The UN spoof I thought was really, really good. yeah. Out there, but still, a lot of, very satirical and just straight up funny.
Yeah, I wonder how long they're going to keep the Chang as security guard thing, because that's a pretty good fit for him.
That is good. There's a lot of there's definitely I always love it when Britta tries so hard to show that she's not honest, and it's always a funny they always poke fun at that. So
so it's great how jealous she is that she's not in in jail in some third world country somewhere.
Yeah, so that's always a good time, and the reaction of the rest of the study group whenever she brings up anything is quite
funny. Yeah,
and I thought frankly Parks and Rec was one of the best episodes of the series. I thought I thought Tammy won. I forget her name.
Yeah, me too.
Clarkson, right? Maybe something like that. I don't know. I want to say Patricia Clarkson, but wasn't she like the wife on Home Improvement? I can't remember.
That was not her.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't her. But anyway, she was a great juxtaposition with Tammy too. Seeing like neutered Ron was excellent. And then just the whole storyline with the gold, like she was after his gold. Did you guys see this episode? That I thought was hilarious. And decoy gold may be like the greatest term. That's my decoy gold. You think I'm prepared for the ground? Just fantastic. And again, this was really, to me, it showed Parks and Rec at it. Yeah, I know Ron was kind of front and center, but there was like a lot of good stuff in the peripheral. We got some John Ralphio.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got your wish.
That's right. We got John Ralphio showing up. I can't get enough of Roy Hibbert from the Indiana Pacers calling Ben. I can't remember. What was the nickname that he called him? I can't remember what it was. But
you're right.
You know what I'm talking about. I need to do better show prep. But anyway, it was very multifaceted. And like, I always think that Leslie Knope is best when she's sticking up for her, for her fellow workers and doing these things. So like when she got drunk on that mash liquor, that may have been one of the funniest sequences in the series. Like I was laughing so hard. I mean, she may do the best blasted on mash liquor impression. And like and Ron kept saying what it could do, that'll melt the shells off of snails, use that to burn the warts off of mules. Just really funny. So I thought the first episode was kind of sluggish, but this one was great. So, even stuff with Chris and Ann doing the video recording and stuff. So I really liked it. The Office, I think it will be a long haul. It definitely wasn't as funny as other ones. But I kind of like where it might be going with it. Instead of having Andy be like a Michael clone, it looks like, he'll be clueless, but it looks like they'll be kind of pulling for him. Like he'll be a likable guy that everyone's pulling for. So we'll see how that translates into actual comedy. And if the ratings, leave with Michael, but, the first episode I thought wasn't that great at all. But this one, at least, I thought it was charming and nice, and it had its moments for sure. So we'll see. Jury's still out on that.
That's good. Did you ever get around to watching Terra Nova?
I did. Actually, I'm like three quarters of the way through the second season.
Yeah.
Second episode. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, I could understand where people would have problems with it. Like, there's definitely a lot of tired cliches. Like, the daughter who's really smart, and the edgy hipster older brother, and so a lot of the family stuff is definitely forced. But for some reason, I just, when like he and Colonel Quaritch are hanging around talking about how to waste pterosaurs, I'm just into it. So if someone said it's corny, they don't like it, I couldn't say, I don't see what you're seeing. But for some reason, I'm just into it. I kind of like it. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely not as deft as far as Lost or the mythology isn't that compelling. But there's just some cool cinematic stuff going on there that I like, and it's hard for me to put my finger on it.
Yeah, it seemed like the second episode took a little bit of a step backward for me because they didn't go into any of that mystery stuff.
Okay.
And at the same time, like when they really got into that whole, pterosaur thing, I like that idea. It's kind of like an Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds type.
Yeah, yeah.
You had these like little flying things. Like how do you actually protect yourself from just a swarm of these things. Right. So that was kind of interesting. You haven't finished it, so I won't comment on the ending. But you know, I think it's one that I'll
make it. I'm guessing maybe they make it out of it alive.
Well,
I just think I don't know. Like, I like Stephen Lang a lot in this. Yeah. I mean, he's just got some. He just got some juice as this grizzled action guy, and he's not settled with this terrible cardboard cutout character from Avatar or anything. So,
yeah.
It's kind of cool to see him running around. He's got the gun strapped, and he's working with Jason O'Mara, and they're kind of solving problems. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I mean, it's just one of those things I can't quite put my finger on. I'm hoping that it definitely gets better and kind of moves past some of those cliches.
Yeah, I think if it can be more than just the characters, because the characters don't really interest me at all.
Yeah,
at this point. So yeah, if they go back to the mystery stuff, you know, talk more about the Sixers and do all that, you know, if they can really rely on that and make that interesting, then that'll be good. I'm at this point, I'm more wary of it than you are, but
The only character interaction I really care about, honestly, is between Jim, you know, played by Jason O'Mara, and honestly, the commander there, Taylor.
Right. Seriously, yeah, I mean, it's true.
Like,
no,
those
I think
guys saddle up in their jeeps and go out to hunt dinosaurs. Great. I'm so, you know, that's cool.
Yeah. Really, the rest of the stuff just kind of slows it down. Like,
yeah,
I don't really care if.
Yeah. I don't care about his family trials and tribulations. I mean, I don't care about the.
But that's what we get, though. We get all the teenage melodrama front and center.
Understood. I understand the angst. I understand that, but at least there's enough there that I like, and I don't know. I'm looking at the IMDb page, and there's, for some reason, Stephen Lang just loves having a mug, I think. He's just standing there with a mug, so. He's got to have a mug of something as he oversees his utopian.
Well, he's not going to hold hot liquids in his hand, Dave.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right, so let's move on what we've been doing for the site. Matt, go ahead.
All right. Okay, last week you guys asked about that movie Submarine. So I've watched it. The review is up on the site now. It's kind of a really quirky kind of coming-of-age story, sort of emphasizing on how much adolescence sucks. And it's very different. It's very dark comedy. The main character is this young kid, and he's very emotionally detached from everything around him, and he looks at everything with this sort of cold, clinical eye. So he's kind of a hard character to sort of get behind throughout the entire movie. So it's definitely, you know, it's a comedy, but it's a really dark comedy because, you know, all this really awful crap happens to him, and yet he can't really process it because he's so, you know, distant from everything and everyone in his life. So, yeah, I guess, you know, it's kind of a downer of a movie, but that's exactly the type of movie that the filmmakers wanted to make. So in that sense, it's a good movie. But it's not, you know, Napoleon Dynamite, and it's not a John Hughes movie. It's way more dark than that.
Gotcha.
All right. I was also lucky enough to review on something, a slight change of tone, on Blu-ray, RoboCop 2.
All right. Not the one where he's flying around. It's the third one, right?
No, the flying jetpack doesn't show up till the third one.
Right. Oh, that's right. That's where he fights the giant robot with the bad guy's face on it.
Yes.
Yeah, Max Headroom edition, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I lose track. And he's like, he's hanging, like, isn't there a scene where he's holding on to a truck and it's driving through an alley and his sparks are flying from his metal butt as it scrapes against the alley wall? For some reason, that's just a lasting image. I don't know why.
And then, but he gets knocked off and he commandeers a motorcycle from a citizen.
Awesome.
He goes chasing after him on a motorcycle.
And that's where he's making his trip towards being a parody of himself, right?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. There's some funny bits where the bad guys at OCP, they try to reprogram RoboCop to be a kinder, gentler RoboCop. That's where some of the satire comes into it. You know? Overall, it's not really as, you know, satiric and doesn't really have that same bite that the first movie had, but it has a lot of sort of big blockbuster action. So
no toxic melting, unfortunately, toxic waste melting, right?
No, sadly not. You know, but there's a brain in a jar, and they have the brain in the jar. They kept the eyes attached to it.
Yes.
So it's the brain in a jar with the two eyes looking around.
Very nice. Eric, how about you?
So this week, the review is up on the site right now. I reviewed Pee Wee Herman show on Broadway. This is the new, Pee Wee Herman, Paul Rubens came back and put on a limited engagement stage show in L.A., New York back at the end of 2010. And it was filmed for an HBO special, and this is that special. So it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's an hour and a half. It's basically an updated version of his original stage show, which he did before the TV show, but it carried a lot of those elements. So it's set in the playhouse. All of the puppets are there, Cherry and Terry and Magic Screen and everybody, and Miss Yvonne and Cowboy Curtis stop by. And it's really, really fast paced and goofy, but a lot of fun. And I think if you have any affection for the character, you'd really enjoy it.
Now, is it for kids?
It straddles a very thin line, and it's basically for everybody. I mean, his original stage, you know, shtick was more adult, I know, and then he toned it, you know, down and cut it out for the TV show. But this is the kind of thing you could absolutely watch with your kids, because the way they word the more adult jokes will go over kids' heads.
Right.
It's very, you know, there's not a lot of the stuff, but anytime they introduce those kind of elements, it's all kind of just really wordplay, double entendre type stuff. And it's, you know, and it's done in a lighthearted way. It's not in a way that it feels like, I don't know, you necessarily feel dirty for watching it with your kids.
Gotcha.
I mean, on the cover of the, you know, the Blu-ray, it said, you know, for kids of all ages. So I think they really are positioning it in that way, and apparently people brought their kids to the shows and stuff, so I think they're aware of that audience. So and then the Blu-ray comes with a full audio commentary with Paul Rubens and the cast, so it's really fun to hear them talk about you know what they're doing and how it related to the early stuff and you know the bits they loved and some of the behind the scenes things. So it's a nice little package. It's fun. I'm glad I got to see it.
Very good. Cool. And were those Paul Rubens, were all that his original creations, all that stuff? Cherry and all the...
Yeah. I mean, yeah, all that stuff was in the original show. I guess he created the character back when he was with the Groundlings. I guess he co-created it with Phil Hartman, actually, who was Captain Carl, you know, in the original show. And yeah. I think in the TV show as well. He's obviously not in the show. But yeah, it's all his stuff. It's all original.
All right. Again, something that's been posted already, but Fast Five, the fifth Fast and Furious movie.
Oh, yeah.
I actually had missed it in the theater, but was looking forward to catching it on Blu-ray. And it's actually pretty good. Certainly, you know, not groundbreaking. It's a straight-up popcorn movie, so it's predictable, and there's beats that you recognize. And Vin Diesel has turned into Steven Seagal, where that he's just indestructible, you know. I think it's something in his producer's credits. So like he and Dwayne the Rock Johnson beat the living crap out of each other, but yet he manages to come out on top. So he just never seems to lose anything. But it is very entertaining. It's an entertaining. It's a heist film, really. It's not like they really pitched the street racing vibe. It's essentially these guys, these characters, and they're on a heist, and it's more of a straight arrow action movie. And I like this is a weird franchise where it seems like the later the sequels get, the better they are. You know, it's like the opposite of the Friday the 13th franchise, for example, right. You know. So I enjoyed the fourth one. The fifth one was a lot of fun. I mean, I like Dwayne the Rock Johnson finally getting a role that he's not embarrassing himself with, you know, like some kind of the Tooth Fairy, for example. This is more of a big grizzled action guy, biceps, punching people in the face kind of stuff. Most biggest kudos to give is they've got some huge action scenes, and for the most part, it's like practically done, like movie magic kind of stuff. Like the big last scene, you may have seen this in the trailer, is they two cars dragging a vault through the streets of Rio de Janeiro. That's, you know, that's a big last scene, and it is an amazing action sequence. Just as far as destruction goes, it's pretty much unrivaled. And it's, you know, it's not CGI. The behind-the-scenes show that they developed different vaults. They built a vault that could drive around a pickup truck, and a guy drove it. And, you know, it's just refreshing to see that, you know. They actually better crashing cars. They were figuring out ways to do this so it looked real. And so at the very least, kudos to that. But it's an entertaining movie. A little long, a little predictable. You know, corny in some spots for sure, but entertaining. and, you know, the furthest from, you know, like, up its own butt you can get, you know? It's like, everyone's having a good time. So I'd recommend it if you just want, you know, a fun summer action movie experience. So take it for what it's worth. And then on the opposite end, real quick, a little something called The Haunted, which is the Animal Planet's attempt at doing a Ghost Hunter reality show.
Great.
Oh, man.
I mean, again, that's posted as well if you're at all interested in that. But yeah, it's the hook is that apparently animals and pets have a higher sensitivity of paranormal activity. So, you know, when people think, so there's just shots of like cats running away and dogs cowering in fear.
So is that what that means when my cat licks herself?
I would blame it on a ghost.
Okay. I've had my suspicions. Okay.
I mean, I would, don't be afraid to blame it on a ghost for sure.
I blame a lot of things on ghosts, Dave.
That's good. I use this as my charge, as my statement, because this is an actual title card used in the show. The quote, you know, verbatim here, quote, after the party, the bunnies continue to act out of character. So, like I said in the review, probably the greatest title card ever created. So. After the party, the bunnies continue to act out of character. That's one of those things you do like an improv game. You'd write that statement, piece of paper, you know.
I can imagine Drew Carey reading that.
Drew Carey would pull that out. Yeah, pretty fantastic. All right, so moving on. Mac, what do we got happening?
All right, why don't we take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. And you folks at home can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. From there, we're going to scroll down and click on the cover art gallery for October 11th. And just talk about what's on the list here. Doesn't seem to be too much, but there are a few hidden gems on this week's list.
We had the last season of Chuck. Not the last season, but, you know, last season on Chuck. The most recent to come out in video.
It really is a soft release week. Not a whole lot coming out, huh?
I will point out that if you are interested in either Diablo or The Horror Within, don't get the individual releases, because there is a 4-movie marathon creature feature that includes both of them, along with some kind of cats, something with a killer cat on the cover, and
it's Night of a Thousand Cats.
Thank you. And The Bog, which not to be confused with The Fog, the John Carpenter movie.
Night of a Thousand Cats. Is that also the old woman who lives in the next door apartment?
That was an episode of The Haunted.
It probably was. I guess Horrible Bosses might be the bigger release, right? I mean, that had a modicum of hype behind it. I don't know.
Yeah, and I guess Kevin James and Zuki.
Ah, that's true. But that looked like the Haunted. That looked like something would send the bunnies running out of character for sure.
I think if those are the top releases, then we should probably give a top spot to the complete series of Gem and the Hologram.
Yes, that's right.
This is a big box.
That thing's huge. Yeah. You have some real good self-esteem to put that up on your DVD shelf for all the world to see.
Man, how much is that retailing for? $57, marked down from $90. It's got 5 perfect stars, 16 customer reviews. Wow.
Do not underestimate the power of Gem and the Hologram.
There's some pretty intense eye makeup shit going on, actually. Yes.
Oh, that's not Kiss? Never mind.
It's not. A movie that I've heard so much about but never got around to seeing somehow, The Story of Ricky on Blu-ray. Have you heard of this story? Have you ever heard of this one? It's apparently ridiculously violent.
Yeah, that's what he's in jail.
He's in jail, and he's just getting into tons of fights. Yeah. And he's like, it's ridiculous. Like, he's strangling guys with their own tendons and ripping out hearts and intestines and crushing heads, right?
He rips a guy's face off.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just kind of infamous for being over the top.
And well, I guess if you think I'm racist, the Soul Man is coming out on
Soul Man.
A double feature with 18 again.
Oh, wow.
With George Burns, right?
Yeah, George Burns and someone. There you go. Actually, I guess you could probably.
He didn't give up. He got down.
Oh, the 80s. Actually, I guess if we had to really kind of pick a top release of the week, it's probably The Tree of Life.
Oh, is that on here? Yeah. That, there you go. That's right. That's right. A fairly polarizing film, as I hear. As most of, it seems like a lot of Terrence Malick's going to be, but the raves have been very high end, so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, not a ton to choose from, so inadvertently sleazy sounding DVD release of the week. Eric, go.
I hate to do it, but it's the only one that sticks out to me, Master Harold and the Boys.
Oh boy.
I'm sorry.
That is pretty bad.
I'm sorry. That's right. Just imagine they're over 18. That's all you have to do. Doesn't mean anything.
All right, Eric. Matt, go ahead.
How about Three-Way Split?
That's very good.
Very good.
I got the horror within. That's all I got. And only if you say the horror really quick, so it sounds like that. Okay. Ambush topics, random topics thrown at each other. I'll go first, gentlemen. Yours is... scene of a character from a movie or TV coming flying right at you as a viewer. So some scene where a character's flying right at you through the TV almost. Probably screaming. But not necessary.
Oh, there's a shot like that in Darkman.
Yes, it's a great one too.
Yeah. Where it's right at the end, right? Where you think the bad guys have won, and then they look to the side, and then Darkman just comes flying right at him.
Yes.
By kind of right at the camera. Yeah.
Now, when he becomes Darkman, he doesn't come right at the camera, but there's a great scene where he gets blown up, and he's, like, pitched across the bay on fire.
Right.
He's not really coming at you. But, yeah, the one where he swings is great. Pretty rough CGI, though. Proto-CGI, I have to say, though.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. During the chase on the freeway, there's some blue screen effects that are...
little dodgy.
I don't know about screaming.
It doesn't have to be screaming.
I'm trying to think of, like, a superhero shot where someone's, like, Superman must have done it at some point.
Oh, I mean, definitely, yeah. I mean, fist out, flying forward.
Yeah, that's what I see.
I mean, definitely, I'm not sure who he's flying at, but he's probably doing that against Nuclear Man in Superman 4 at some point, isn't he?
I don't know. I think maybe in the first movie, when we very first see him in the costume, in the Fortress of Solitude, and he flies for the first time, is that right at the camera?
Maybe. Is there, does the Neverending Story end that way?
I don't know if
that's... Falcor flying, no.
Oh, he might go over the camera. That's interesting.
I see it as a movie shot where it's like the final shot, or like you say, when someone first gets their powers and it just like vroom right at you. So my answer is every movie like that.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. And that's a copyright, by the way. He just copyrighted that.
TM.
Okay. I had a couple. I was thinking maybe Die Hard 2, where McClane gets... He ejects himself from the exploding plane.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. But I'm going to go with... our boy Salim Abu Aziz from True Lies, you know, when Schwarzenegger fires him off the jet and he gets one of the all-time great over-the-top bad guy death scenes. He's on the missile. He gets fired at the helicopter and just comes flying at you.
That's good.
Fantastic. So, all right. Eric, who do you got?
Missing body parts.
Hmm. Okay, so this is, we're not thinking like amputees or anything, right? Like bodies that just went
anyone. Missing? Oh, no, it's just really anyone who's like missing a body part of some sort.
Gotcha.
So it could be amputees.
Okay.
Well, I just mentioned RoboCop 2, and that one, the bad guys dismantle poor helpless RoboCop.
Oh, that's tough.
And they leave his torso and all of his severed limbs just lying there in front of the police station. And, you know, his leg is behind his head and it's still moving around and stuff.
Now,
although if you stop and think about it, how could his leg be moving independently if it's separated from his brain and his, I don't know, do we even know what his power source is?
Who, RoboCop?
A battery, probably.
A dilithium crystal shard, perhaps?
There you go.
Now, this won't be my answer because I'm not sure of it, but this is a Short Circuit 2 is a favorite conversation topic on this show. Do the muggers ever dismantle Johnny Five, or do they just, like, smack him around and damage him? Do you recall?
I don't think so. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think they just smack him around.
Yeah, okay. Alright, so, my turn. Okay, well, Eric, we don't want to revisit what the villain was doing in the second Dexter novel, I don't think. We don't want to go there.
We've never actually visited it because we'll never actually say what it is in case someone wants to read it.
But. That's right. But it's pretty it's terrible. Okay, let's see. Okay, how about this? You guys recall I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker? You remember that movie? You recall? You ever seen that one?
Yeah, I recall its existence.
Okay. Like years ago. I barely remember anything about it.
Okay, I might be flying solo. This is one of my favorites. But there's a scene that, you know, it's like a parody on the blaxploitation genre, you know. It's actually made by the Wayans guys before they disgraced themselves with a Scary Movie franchise.
Right.
But so it's pretty funny. One scene has our hero taking back this woman he met at a club, you know, taking back to the apartment for some lovemaking, and they begin swapping secrets. Like he says, you know, I wasn't really in the army. I just do it to pick up girls. And then she says, oh, I got a secret too, you know. And then she, my hair is not real. She takes her wig off. And it's just, you know, and my eyes aren't really blue. And then she starts removing her legs. Like, she just starts taking limbs off. So it was very odd, but it was a pretty good gag, actually. Took her left leg off and started, I think the payoff punchline was, don't make me hop after you. Like that. That's what you're missing with I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
That's pretty good.
Wants humor,
pretty good. There you go. Okay, mention. So as part of, you know, since it's October and scary movies and stuff, I watched Wes Craven's The People Under the Stairs, which I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
It's on Netflix. And I guess the whole kind of thing about that movie is that there's this crazy brother and sister team who basically have been stealing children, and then anytime they do anything wrong, anytime they break either the see no evil, hear no evil, or speak no evil rule in their eyes, they remove that offending body part, and then they throw them down in the basement. Which seems like poor planning, really. You probably should just kill them rather than have a basement full of deformed kids, but that's just me. I'm not insane, so.
I'm glad we settled that. That's good.
Yeah. Not a great movie, but I saw it.
It's definitely a strange and unusual movie.
Yeah, there's kind of weird performances that help it in some ways, but are also super weird in other ways.
All right, Mac, finish it off.
All right, this is a little similar to Eric's in that it's incredibly violent. Broken Necks.
Ah. So many to choose from. so many. How about Meryl Streep in Death Becomes Her?
Oh, yeah.
An underrated movie, if you ask me. We've talked about this, I think. You know, it certainly has its problems, but as far as what Zemeckis did with effects and stuff, you know, pretty impressive. But obviously, Meryl Streep's character falls down the stairs, and there's some extended sequences of her trying to reorient her neck. So, very good makeup work there. Bravo.
All right, so I'll go to the opening scene of Deadwood, which I guess isn't spoil too much. I mean, it's the opening scene. It starts with Timothy Oliphant as the marshal in this town, and there's a man in the prison cell, and he's, I think, stole something. And then this angry mob shows out front, and they want to take that guy and hang him. So what Timothy Oliphant does is he brings the guy out, and he says that, you know, the guy has to die because that's the punishment for the crime, but he's going to do it, you know, under the law. So he actually, like, throws a rope over the you know, edge of the roof of the sheriff's station. That's not what they called it back then, but, you know, back where they were. And, you know, he has a short rope, and he puts it around the guy's neck, and he basically has to, like, grab the guy and like, yank him down to break his neck because there's not enough room for him.
Ah, nice. So,
but he does it his way.
Very pleasant.
Yeah.
All right, Mac, what do you got?
Well, I've been rewatching some of the old classic Universal monster movies from back in the 30s. You know, Dracula, Frankenstein, all those good guys. And in Son of Frankenstein and Ghost of Frankenstein, we meet Igor. It's interesting how Igor in these movies is not really how pop culture remembers Igor. You know, think Igor, you think the hunchback who's helping the mad scientist. But he's really not that. He's this sort of scoundrel troublemaker in the village who was hanged, but he survived with a broken neck. And so he's walking around with this big crick in his neck, and there's this makeup that the actor has this makeup where it looks like you can kind of see a bone protruding like nice. Under the skin on his neck. Really nice and disgusting. But it's really interesting how just different this Igor is to what everyone thinks Igor is. So I think we all need to go back to these movies, and we need to take back Igor.
Has Igor got a bum rap? Is that what you're saying?
I think so, yeah, because he's not the lab assistant. You know, he's really devious, and he's like a manipulator. And, you know,
Is he still a hunchback?
No, he's a dude with a broken neck.
Ah.
Yeah. The hunchback was Fritz in the first movie.
Oh, thank you.
And then I think there's another one later on named Theodore. I don't know. I haven't gotten to the two House movies yet.
When do they move in with Dave and start singing songs?
I don't know.
That's a whole other issue to tackle someday. All right, and of course you can go on and on about all the crack necks in action movies that, you know, apparently, according to action movies, it takes a very small amount of force to completely break someone's neck, so.
Oh, yeah, the old neck snap.
The old neck snap.
The neck snap, yeah.
That's right.
Well, I just assume that every time that happens, the person's neck has just been, someone's tried to break it so many times. It's kind of like when, you know, you're working on the pickle jar.
That's right.
You give it to someone else and they open it the first time.
That's right.
You loosened,
it for me.
Exactly. Someone's loosened their neck.
I loosened that, yes. All right. So that is it. So thank you for tuning in to this edition of Friday Filibuster. FridayFilibuster at DVDVerdict.com is our email. Mac, take us away.
Clatu Verata Nikto.